Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Thursday, February 20th. I'm Lisa Music reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, station manager explains how worrisome trends affect KMUD. Federal funding freeze impacts to the North Coast. And the KMUD News Sports Report. Stay tuned. News on those stories coming right up. KMUD's general manager was at a meeting of local progressives to talk about the challenges community radio stations face in the era of new federal control. Daniel Mintz reports.
Seeing risks to independent media, humbled progressive Democrats sought insights from a community radio leader, KMUD general manager Kara Randolph. Chartered by the Humboldt County Democratic Central Committee, Humboldt Progressive Democrats strives to work toward restoration of citizen ownership of our democracy, according to its website. And the group sees democracy under pressure with the new federal administration of President Donald Trump. Publicly funded media is increasingly targeted, and Randolph was at the February 19th Progressive Democrats meeting to talk about how community radio is meeting new challenges. New Federal Communications Commission regulations are affecting public media, she said, adding that, quote, it is worrisome. Randolph talked about the perils of new federal oversight.
As most of you probably know, one of the co-authors of Project 2025 is now the head of the FCC. And within that agenda of Project 2025, they did make it clear that they would like to get rid of public media. And just in the last few weeks, we've seen investigations by the FCC towards NPR, PBS, as well as a San Francisco-based radio station, KCBS. The investigations into NPR and PBS seem to mostly be around underwriting, looking for any tiny violations of underwriting, which is how we support our business. It's the word we use for our sponsors. We don't do advertising, but we have sponsors that support our station. And so they're going, you know, with a very fine-tooth comb to make sure that all of the language is appropriate. And there's a lot of really minute details that are really easy to consider to be in violation, whether it's just saying the word, visit this website could be considered a call to action, even though it's so subtle. We have to be really careful with our words and just say, here's the website. And so at KMUD, we've had to go through all of our underwriting again to just confirm that it's in line with the rules.
Randolph said 25% of KMUD's operating budget is from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which last year provided $135,000 of a $556,000 operating budget. She said KMUD has received two-thirds of this year's Corporation for Public Broadcasting grant, and 2025 will likely be funded, but she said, quote, I don't know what the future will look like. With the feds eyeing public media content, KMUD and other sources are balancing the need to inform their audiences against the risks of being investigated.
The radio station in San Francisco that is being investigated is because they were reporting where ICE raids were. And so the FCC is considering that a public safety hazard. And so it's been a little tricky navigating how we can support our community and staying free from investigation. So we're allowed to post pretty much whatever online. The FCC rules don't really apply to websites, social media, but anything on the air is up for investigation. So we've had to play it a little more cautious with what we say on air, but trying to still use other tools to get messages out. You know, we really depend on our members and community sponsors for continued financial support. And I think we're going to have to depend on that a little more than we have in the past, because I'm imagining that funding will shift.
She added that on the positive side, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting recently announced a new grant for rural radio stations, and KMUD is applying. Randolph also talked about the aspects of community radio that make its value bipartisan.
You know, public media is just crucial, especially to, like I said, in rural communities. There's very few news outlets that can provide immediate, up-to-date information in the face of emergencies. That's where we've really shined and been able to really be an important, one of the ways to be a really important community asset during the tsunami warning and the earthquake and wildfire season, storms with road closures. We're able to report in real time. We have live DJs in the studios able to update that information, which is becoming more and more rare. Most radio stations don't have live DJs on the weekends or at nights, and sometimes even during the day. So we're, you know, really hoping to be able to continue getting funding through a lot of emergency news sources and keep on trucking. You know, I'm only been at KMUD for about 4 months, so it's new to me being in KMUD. And then this situation is even more, I don't think any of us really saw it coming. So, you know, we have other ways of getting some funds, but this is a big dip for sure.
Members of Progressive Democrats and those who called into the online meeting expressed appreciation for KMUD, and so did Randolph. She said she comes from a background of local commercial radio, and quote, being part of a community station really aligns with my politics and community activism a lot more. For KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
The Trump administration's funding freeze and budget cuts have severely impacted California's North Coast, affecting education, healthcare, childcare, senior services, and emergency response. These cuts, part of a broader effort to reduce government spending, has left local governments and organizations unable to access critical federal funds, causing layoffs and service reductions. Those injured have filed lawsuits claiming the freeze breaches funding agreements and unfairly impacts vulnerable communities. Some courts have temporarily restored funding, but the long-term outcome is uncertain. Local leaders and residents say they are worried about the region's financial stability. At a recent roundtable hosted by Congressman Jared Huffman, local leaders detailed the devastating consequences these cuts are having on their communities. Huffman has also launched a website where constituents can report how the funding freezes have impacted them.
It's been really dizzying. I mean, just on the first day, on Inauguration Day, we saw 26 executive orders. We have seen 40 more signed since then. We have never seen anything like it, and we are still scrambling to understand the scope and the legality and the implications of all of these different orders.
The executive orders signed by President Trump aim to halt federal funding for programs involving diversity, equity, and inclusion, as well as anything related to climate change or the, quote, Green New Deal. This has sent shockwaves through rural communities in Huffman's district, which rely heavily on these federal dollars. Education leaders warned that school funding shortfalls could leave vulnerable students without critical resources. Michael Davies Hughes, superintendent of the Humboldt County Office of Education, highlighted the potential loss of Title I funding, stating,
if we had this funding freeze or cuts or delays in funding, and unfortunately, as is often the case, this negative effect would be disproportionately felt by students who are already at a disadvantage. So we're talking about our students in Humboldt County that are living in poverty. And if you think if there are impacts to Title I, that would have a devastating effect on our most vulnerable students in the county.
Many of these students come from low-income families and rely on school programs for meals, transportation, and additional academic support. Jeff Harris from Del Norte County Unified School District echoed these concerns, adding,
every dollar that goes away because of a lack of federal funding is a dollar that comes out locally, and we just can't sustain that.
Rural districts like those in Del Norte and Humboldt serve students in remote areas where resources are already limited, making these cuts particularly harmful. Fabio Robles from Trinity County Office of Education highlighted the unique challenges facing his county, which is primarily composed of federal forest lands.
You know, while we make the most of the funding we do get, we're also the 58th out of 58th worst county in the state of California. So we depend heavily on federal funds. Right now, as a county outside of the Forest Reserve, which you're very much aware of, that's $1.57 million to Trinity County schools. And then another $1.5 million in the other federal programs that have been talked about.
Jamie Green from the Trinity Alps School District echoed these concerns, stating that the loss of secure rural schools funding alone would be devastating.
That will literally take the wheels off our buses in our district. So we will lose $600,000 and have 5 to 6 layoffs that we'll have to do in March. It's 23% of our county road department budget, just secure rural schools. So they're concerned about that.
The program, established to offset the decline in timber revenues from federal lands, is crucial for rural areas like theirs. Without it, schools and vital local services such as road maintenance face significant financial strain, affecting both education and community infrastructure. The potential cuts to mental health funding are also a major worry for the region. Green explained,
we got a mental health grant that we wrote for Siskiyou, Modoc, and Trinity counties. If that grant gets cut, that's going to put us right back to everything being telehealth.
Healthcare and family services are also at risk. Marianne Hansen from First Five Humboldt emphasized the immediate threat to early childhood programs, warning,
Humboldt County has the highest infant mortality rate in California, according to the Strong Start Index. The rate is especially high among Indigenous babies. Our program is designed to address that disparity and increase infant health by providing home visits to newborns with parent education and crisis supports. And then the Pathways to Resilience part of the program continues those visits to babies whose parents have a history of substance use disorder, helping them get treatment, parent education, and resources. If that program were frozen, several local clinics would be impacted, including United Indian Health Services, Kamau Medical Center, Redwoods Rural Health, the clinics that are serving the most rural communities in our area and whose clients experience the greatest health disparities. Families would lose access to those supports during the most vulnerable time of their babies' lives, and funding for local jobs at those clinics would be lost.
These clinics, according to Hansen, provide essential prenatal and pediatric care to families who may not have access to alternative health care options, including Indigenous communities and low-income residents. Child care providers are bracing for severe impacts as well. Carrie Venegas from Changing Tides stated,
okay, we're talking about some of our most vulnerable kids. Just in Humboldt County alone, there was over $8.3 million that went out in child care. So now we're also talking about child care businesses. We're talking about a large number of small business owners. We're talking about women operated and owned businesses. We're talking about a majority of professional child care providers within centers and center base. Our Head Start programs are definitely in the crosshairs, despite what's being said.
Many working families depend on subsidized child care programs to remain employed. And without these services, parents may be forced to leave their jobs or seek alternative, potentially lower quality care arrangements. Senior services are facing existential threats, with some organizations at risk of complete shutdown. Maggie Kraft from Area 1 Agency on Aging issued a dire warning.
I mean, if this is resolved badly, then we'll all be gone. If this is resolved after April, we just won't be here.
Thousands of seniors in Humboldt and Del Norte counties depend on the agency for in-home support services, meal deliveries, and transportation assistance, all of which could disappear if funding is not restored. One of the most immediate dangers posed by the funding freeze is to emergency services. Shelter Cove Fire Chief Nick Pape described the halt of a $6.2 million Shelter Cove Community Wildfire Defense Grant.
Yeah, so 2022, the fire department and the RID joined together to put in a application for the 2022 wildfire community wildfire defense grant, and that was originally hosted through USDA and then sent to U.S. Forest Service Region 5 to administer. We heard around about the spring of 2023 that we were successful, and we were awarded $6,222,000 to implement our project, and that project was to treat every home in Shelter Cove and about 90% of the vacant lots, and then an additional 1,200 acres of greenbelt that's within the community. So we were extremely excited, as one would think, and it was a game changer for Shelter Cove, and it still has the potential to be a huge victory for our community. A lot of people have heard some of the things that are going on at the federal government level, and it finally kind of trickled down to our area, specifically with our project. Again, this was a 2022 grant that we received that's good for 6 years, and our implementation plan goes through those full 6 years. Currently, we are in the third year, and we were just ramping up on it and had four local contractors on contract to start the treatment. And unfortunately, we had a request for $320,000 reimbursement denied on February 3rd. With just a basic email that said all funds are held indefinitely due to the government audit or, you know, fiscal responsibility investigation, whatever you want to call it. We didn't get much information about why the funding was held up, but it's held up, and we're unable to get reimbursed for the money that we've already spent to date. The RID fire department, we're on the hook for about $120,000 out of that $320,000 contract. But we still have over $5 million left on the grant. So, you know, unfortunately, we're not completely sure what's going to happen with that money.
Chief Pape wrote in a letter to the community, quote, "Wildfires don't care about political agendas or who you voted for. They only require the right conditions, weather, fuel, and topography." Additionally, Pape stated, "Shelter Cove has all the ingredients for a fast-moving, destructive fire." Many Shelter Cove residents are retirees or individuals living in isolated areas, making evacuation during a fire even more challenging. The freeze is also affecting employment opportunities.
I would love to keep the work going, but if we extend ourselves too much and you know, take on too much more of this debt, the fire department and the Resort Improvement District don't have the funds set aside to cover that. So that's why we ultimately made the tough decision to put a work stop order on our contractors. I mean, that's one of the really big things as well that a lot of people aren't thinking about is that is direct funds out of their family's pockets. I know a lot of them were local businessmen that had just started to increase their and, you know, grow their businesses to keep up with some of these larger contracts that you know, tie into the grants that we were awarded. And I feel really bad for those local businessmen that, you know, either are going to get delayed. I know some of them even took out loans to purchase more equipment for these projects.
Additionally, a local resident who had applied for a director position at a regional arts and culture organization shared their experience of having a scheduled interview canceled at the last minute. Quote, "The representative explained they were nervous about their funding streams continuing after one of the executive orders signed by the president would cease support for the arts, libraries, and museums. The organization has decided not to hire an employee at this time," end quote. The resident expressed frustration, noting that the job market now looks bleaker than ever. Supporters of the funding freeze, however, argue that the cuts are necessary to curb government spending and refocus federal resources on national priorities. President Trump has emphasized that the freeze is essential for reducing wasteful spending and ensuring taxpayer dollars are used effectively. At a finance conference in Miami, Trump stated that the United States is now, quote, "prepared for business," end quote, and that halting excessive government expenditures is a crucial step in stabilizing the economy. Legal battles continue to unfold as multiple lawsuits challenge the legality of the freeze. A federal judge recently issued a temporary injunction against halting certain grant payments, arguing that the administration lacks the authority to unilaterally suspend funding agreements. However, the administration maintains that contractual provisions permit such actions. Despite some court rulings temporarily reinstating funds, it remains uncertain whether and when these funds will be fully released and if they will arrive in time to prevent the collapse of what many see as critical services. To help document the local impacts, Congressman Huffman has set up a website where constituents can report how the funding freezes have affected them. Visit kmud.org for that link. Ray Hamill brings us details of all of this week's big local sports stories, including news of a thrilling finish to the Dick Nicolai Girls Tournament Final, all the latest on this week's NCS basketball playoffs, and local college basketball, in which two local schools were crowned HDNL champs on the wrestling mats.
The St. Bernard's Crusaders clinched a first-ever Dick Nicolai Tournament Championship in girls basketball in thrilling fashion in front of a packed house at Lumberjack Arena on Friday night, while the McKinleyville Panthers won their second tournament in 3 years after upsetting the Arcata Tigers in the boys' final. Hello and welcome to this week's Kmud News Sports Report. I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com. We'll have more on both championship games in just a moment as we take a look at all of the big local sports stories of the week, including all the latest on this week's North Coast Section basketball playoffs, news of the weekend league wrestling championships, and all the latest local college basketball. But first up, the biggest local sports event of the year did not disappoint. Last Friday night, the St. Bernard's girls were crowned Dick Nicolai Tournament champions for the first time in school history after a thrilling come-from-behind win over the Arcata Tigers. The Little Four champs trailed the Big Five champs by as many as 13 points early in the second half, but would rally for a 46-44 win with sophomore guard CJ Figas hitting the game-winning basket as time expired. The Crusaders grew into the game and began to take control in the second half, going on a 22-5 run to open up a 4-point lead late in the game. The Tigers, to their credit, would battle back to tie the game at 44-44 in the final minute, but Figas and the Crusaders would have the final say and won the game in dramatic fashion. Senior Layla Florvilla scored a game-high 21 points in the win, while Figas added 11 points. In the boys' final, the Panthers controlled the tempo for much of the night and held on late for a 57-49 win. The tournament championship is the fourth all-time for the Mac boys and their second in 3 years after also defeating Arcata in the final 2 years ago. The victory avenged a pair of conference losses to the Tigers, who won this year's Big Five championship with an undefeated run through conference play. But they were unable to carry that momentum into Friday's big showdown, and even Arcata head coach Kellen Maynard admitted afterwards that the Panthers just seemed to want it more. Bodie Douglas scored a game-high 17 points in the win, while teammate Neil Moon finished with 16 points. 2 days later, both teams were included in the NCS postseason field, as expected. In fact, 13 of the 18 HDNL varsity teams qualified for the section postseason tournaments, including three that earned number one seeds in their brackets. The NCS playoffs got underway on Tuesday, and it was a disappointing opening night for the local boys teams. The Hoopa, Eureka, and Arcata boys all fell at the first hurdle to end their seasons, while the Del Norte boys won their playoff opener to advance to this weekend's quarterfinals. After winning this year's Big Five, the Arcata boys were included in the Division One field for the postseason, but they had to travel to play Alameda, where they lost 73-54. In Division Three action, Eureka traveled to Berkeley and lost 71-43, while in Division Five, the Hoopa boys played at Athenian and lost 62-54. The Del Norte boys, who are seeded number three in Division Five, welcomed number 14 Justin Siena to Crescent City and won 43-34. The win sets up a quarterfinal meeting with number 11 Sonoma Valley on Friday night at 7 p.m. in Crescent City. In NCS girls action on Tuesday, Fortuna and Eureka successfully navigated their playoff openers, but Big Five champions Arcata lost 48-41 at home to Montgomery in Division 1 action. The Loggers were also included in the Division 1 field and are seeded number 4. The Eureka girls beat Washington 39-36 in their opener and will host their quarterfinal on Friday night against number 5 California. The most impressive showing of the opening night for the HDNL came from the Fortuna girls, who traveled to Kelseyville and won their Division 3 game 47-29 with one of their most complete performances of the season. The number 6 seeded Huskies will play their quarterfinal at number 3 Middletown also on Friday night. The playoff action continued on Wednesday night with three more local teams playing, including a double doubleheader of games at McKinleyville High School. Just 5 days after their big Nicolai tournament win, the McKinleyville boys lost their NCS opener against Marin Catholic 61-58. But later in the evening, the McKinleyville girls won a close showdown against Heritage 49-45. The Hoopa girls also won their playoff opener, beating Tamil Pius 61-49, giving the HDNL girls 4 wins in 5 opening round playoff games. 3 more HDNL teams will open their playoffs this weekend, all 3 of whom received the top seeds in a first-round bye in their brackets. The St. Bernard's girls are seeded number 1 in Division 3 and will host number 8 San Domenico on Friday night at 7, while the Ferndale girls were handed the top seed in Division 6 and will open at home against number 8 Victory Christian Academy on Saturday night at 7. Also on Saturday night at 7, the St. Bernard's boys, who are seeded number 1 in Division 6, will open their playoffs against either San Francisco Waldorf or Round Valley. In local high school wrestling, meanwhile, the Del Norte boys and Arcata girls teams were crowned HDNL champions after strong showings for both at Saturday's tournament at Arcata High School. The Warriors claimed 5 of the 14 individual boys' titles, including wins for standout seniors Curtis Bartley and Colton Shad, who were named the tournament most outstanding lower and upper weight wrestlers, respectively. In girls' action, the Tigers won 6 of the 13 individual titles on their way to the title. Del Norte's Ali Bartley and Carly Dodson were named the most outstanding lower and upper weight wrestlers for the girls. And finally this week, in local college basketball, the College of the Redwoods men's team clinched a 4th Golden Valley Conference championship in 5 seasons with a 94-78 win over Feather River at Seor on Saturday. The Corsairs closed out the regular season with a record of 21-7 overall, and they were 8-2 in the GVC. And they will host a playoff game next week, with the brackets set to be announced on Sunday. Both Cal Poly Humboldt teams traveled to play at San Francisco State on Saturday, with the men falling 81-67 and the women winning a 4th straight game, 59-58. And that's this week's KMUD News Sports Report. Until next time, I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Patricia Tinkler, and thanks to our reporters, Daniel Mintz and Ray Hamill. KMUD News is online. You can find us on kmud.org, SoundCloud, Instagram, and Facebook. That's where you can see related stories, links, and videos. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Reporting from the KMUD studio in Redway, I'm Lisa Music.